Thursday, April 9th. Today was a truly big day. Up early, 7 o'clock, breakfast with Lyndon, whom I had hoped would sleep later. My last words to him were that I could have caught a much later plane if I could only have ridden the shuttle. He said, well, for God's sake, don't, because we're just about to run into a big strike tonight, a railroad strike. So I left at 8:30 on a commercial with Liz and Bess, and I believe Francis Lewin, for a New York appearance that I had anticipated with both dread and the will to succeed. It was the first anniversary luncheon of the Eleanor Roosevelt Memorial Foundation, and I was going because Jean Kentner had asked me to, and Adlai Stevenson had followed it up with an even more persuasive letter. Jean met me at LaGuardia, took me by the hand, and had me in tow all day. On the way in, we made a brief stop at the needlework shop to design one or more needlepoint pillows for the White House, which are to be a gift from some good soul that's willing to put in all those hours of work. I wanted something done in blue bonnets. Headquarters were the New York Hilton, all glass and steel, where the luncheon took place before an audience of 2,800 who had paid 12.5 a plate. It was expected to raise $100,000 for the Eleanor Roosevelt Foundation and will be spent for internships in the human rights field, for cancer research, and for the construction of two memorial wings at the Hyde Park Library. The first event was a pre-luncheon reception for women who had paid $1,000 each to participate. Jean Kentner, Anna Rosenberg Hoffman, and I were the receiving line, and in marched a guest list that comprised a large part of the power structure of New York. From the financial side, the philanthropic side, all those interested in human welfare, and I expect some of those interested in just society. Arts were heavily represented, with Mrs. Oscar Hammerstein, Celeste Holm, Mrs. Alan J. Lerner of My Fair Lady, Mrs. Jan Pierce, Mrs. Jason Robards, Jr., whom I had last seen at After the Fall, Mrs. Billy Rose, Elaine Anderson Steinbeck, Mrs. John Steinbeck. Among old friends were Helen Gahagan Douglas, India Edwards, and how amazing in that group of women, Major J.R. Parton of Texas. I was glad to see Margaret Truman Daniel there, and we had a good talk about my wonderful trip with her daddy to Greece. And especially interested to meet Mrs. Marshall Field, my new appointee to the Committee for the Preservation of the White House, generous donor to the Democratic Party, and a woman long interested in all good works. Most surprising and very pleasant was to see Tommy Wurzbach Glick, Mrs. Irving Glick, Sarah's sister. There was naturally a brace of Roosevelts, Mrs. F.D. Roosevelt III, Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt Jr., Mr. and Mrs. John Roosevelt, tiny, lively Mrs. Kermit Roosevelt, and Miss Nina Roosevelt. Among Negro leaders, there were Mr. and Mrs. Roy Wilkins, and Mr. and Miss Whitney Young, Jr. Mrs. Ralph Munch, though I have to remind myself that she comes in this category because I've gotten feeling I know her well enough that the differences rub off and one ceases to categorize people. David Dubinsky was there, bouncing lively around, and the ubiquitous Pearl Mester, whose appetite for life extends to many fields. From the newspaper world, there was Dorothy Schiff, and I never see her without remembering that once in an elevator going up to a luncheon, I was mistaken for Dorothy Schiff, which would probably give her pain, but which I remember with considerable satisfaction. Having greeted all the big brass, we went marching in to the luncheon table. Adlai Stevenson arriving from his latest crisis at the UN just in time to go in with us. The whole luncheon was Jean Kentner's triumph, and very well handled it was. Marian Anderson spoke some words from Mrs. Roosevelt's book, Tomorrow is Now, and I found her speaking voice almost as moving as a singing voice. To me, the most touching thing of all was Anna Rosenberg Hoffman, handsomely dressed, her fingers as bright with jewels as her mind itself is bright, reading the last letters that she received from Mrs. Roosevelt, wherein she said that she didn't want her friends to give her, actually it amounted to money to start the foundation with, that she intended to work right on up at least until her 80th birthday or as much beyond as she could, but that if the time came when she could no longer work, she hoped then that perhaps they would. Anna's hand and her voice shook. Not even Adlai Stevenson, with his silver tongue, and what a command of language he has, could quite equal her sincerity.